right. Welcome. Some of you are here for the first time for our session and the beginning of our 90-day intensive Ango period. Session we have more often, and it means to gather the mind. It's a wonderful idea, to pull together the mind. And it, I've been doing a lot of different things and kind of disparate mind, and so it's just a wonderful idea that I'm able to spend a week's time gathering my mind together, reunifying myself, my intention, and my life. It's a wonderful thing. And this particular session marks the beginning of our 90-day intensive, as I said, which means, Ango means peaceful dwelling. So the idea is we gather our minds and then we're able to dwell peacefully in this world that we live in, to dwell peacefully. And I wonder, as I look around the room, what it would be like for you to have your mind gathered with a sense that you are living with peace and joy, that you are dwelling peacefully in your life and not reaching for something that's not here right now or regretting something that's past, but simply to dwell peacefully. I think this is why I have continued to do sesshin all these years. I have a certain resistance before it begins because it doesn't exactly fit my clock. And yet when I come and I do this over and over again, I relearn that the most powerful teaching is simply to quiet my mind and allow myself to hear all the other voices that are always there, that get drowned out by this kind of the pressure of my ordinary kind of automatic self. And there's something about the austerity of this session that can quicken our senses too. Quicken our hearts and minds. You know, we say, look down. It's not that it's an unfriendly community, but it's that if we look down and we truly don't engage others for a week's time, when we look up again, our eyes are fresh and we can truly be present to others. It's a wonderful thing. It's not that this is the only way to be, and it would be weird, for me anyway, to live this way, to live sesshin all the time. And sometimes beginners, very often, they fall so in love with sesshin, they go back home and then they have to deal with their families, and they want it to be like that. But it's just, this is retreat time. That's what we're doing. It's simply retreat time. It's like washing our eyes and ears and minds and bodies in a different kind of way. I think most of us come up here thinking about our individual self, what I'm going to get out of it. And when we leave, we realize that that individual self is actually a web of relationship with all beings, with the beings that we share sesshin with the beings in our memory, both our brain's memory and our genetic memory, with the beings that are all around, the people who built this building and who have allowed it to continue to serve the world. The nature around us, as Sister Rosemary talked about last night, incredible relationships that we have with everything that is. And we forget that. Well, I'm going on sesshin, just me. But when we come here, we realize it's much more beautiful than that. It's Indra's net. Well, I experienced that this morning as we were chanting. You know, one of the first ways that we began to enter that sense of more than one is when we place our voice with all the other voices. We join the other voices, and together we make that sound. And just as we were chanting that very slow healing chant, the Shosai Myoki Jujo Dharani, the Dharani, which has no meaning, which is all about just the sounds in each one of our bodies. And at that moment, it felt to me like the Sangha finally clicked, and we were all making the one sound together. It was very, very lovely. And the thing about that is that no one was pushing the sound or lagging behind, but each one of us allowed the sound to be right on top of our heads, allowed the moment to be right on top of our heads, not pushing too far fast or too slow. Meister Eckhart said, "The core is a simple stillness which is unmoved itself, but by whose immobility all things are moved and receive life." So it starts with the stillness, and out of that, everything moves. A profound realization of our place in the world. So I encourage you all to just sit during this sesshin. Just walk when it's time to do kinhin. Just eat when it's time to eat. Don't worry about getting anything. Don't worry about getting it right. Am I doing it right? Stay awake! But just do what is happening in the moment. There's a Zen saying, when walking, just walk. When sitting, just sit. Above all, don't wobble. No, just don't wobble. You could say that's the whole topic of our Anga study. Just actualizing the absolute in our daily life. Or as Maizumi Roshi said, the way of our everyday life. You know, not these fantasies we have of some story we heard of Satori, but the way of everyday life. So, because what life are we living other than this one? Really. The rest is a fantasy or a nightmare, a ghost, something that pulls us away from our very life. What is here is what is real. And that is what we're called to investigate, to study, to realize, and to manifest. So during this particular sesshin, we are celebrating the path of Zen also. You may notice that our morning rounds are much longer than they usually are. Usually just the teachers come, the co-abbots come in and walk around. But in actual fact, we have three three sets walking around saying good morning to you. And that those morning rounds, when you put your hands in gassho, it's your way of saying good morning. And the people walking by are looking down at you, and their hands are in gassho, and they're saying good morning too in a silent, formal, zen-like way. It's our way of saying good morning. A little formal, but it brings us all to awareness of each other. So because this is an ango, a peaceful dwelling time, we have a practice leader, a shuso. A shuso literally means head monk. We often call it a practice leader because we are basically a lay sangha, even those of us who have ordained or live a lay life. And so it's shift back and forth. In our shuso, this ango period, of course, is our beloved Joan. And it is his job to model for us what it is to be a Zen person, to live an individual, unique life that holds up the whole world. Joan has been a member of our community for many years. When did you start, do you know? 2000, so 8 years. He spent a lot of time chasing his mind around the Zendo, like we all have. And 3 years ago, I think his practice played a large part in it. Joan decided to change his life entirely. He had a very kind of relaxed lifestyle, and instead he went to nursing school. And last year graduated from nursing school and got his license and is now working in a hospice at Beth Israel. He strives to offer wisdom and compassion, and probably a lot of times he offers impatience and other aspects of the human character. But one thing that you can notice in Joan is he doesn't have that arrogance of knowing. He's always ready for the improvisation, the response that comes out of the moment itself, rather than something he's read somewhere or some patterned way of behaving. And this I call the Zen spirit. It's to be alive to the moment, to be awake and aware of the uniqueness of each moment. So it's wonderful to have Joan be our shuso. And the second round of greetings that are happening are quite unusual, happen only rarely here, is that this week we are having a Dharma transmission. You know, in our line, we don't give Dharma transmission lightly. It's very, very easy to talk about the Dharma. I think you can go to Costco and get yourself some tapes and CDs all about the Dharma. It's everywhere. But what is really difficult is to live the Dharma so thoroughly that it is in your marrow, and that you express it with your every gesture. And that's what, in our line, we require. Ryotan started studying in 1989, when our village Zendo was a small sitting group. So I said to him last night, 1989, 2008, right on time. Takes about 20 years of devoted, regular practice. Never missing sesshin. Never missing zazen kai. The Tuesday night man. So, Ryotan now leads our Sing Sing Sangha also, in addition to his other tasks. He's on our board. He will receive Dharma transmission on the 30th, and so he walks by after the Shuso, and that's whom you're greeting. And he's not in the room today because part of Dharma transmission week is very medieval. He has to copy documents on long pieces of silk of the lineage from the Buddha down to me, to him, and other kind of obscure documents. And so he's upstairs copying that. This is something that I did actually here at Wisdom House many years ago. And Sensei did, actually you did that in the city. You didn't have the benefit of a retreat to do that on. So that's what's going on. I wanted to explain that to the new people. And then the third round is Sensei and I, as the co-founders of the Zendo, walking around saying good morning to you. So during this retreat, every day in the afternoon period, we'll be reading from our study text for this period, which is the Genjo Koan. The Genjo Koan was written, I think, in about 1238 or something like that, by Dogen Zenji, the founder of our line of Zen, the great philosopher, monk, poet. And this was one of his first writings after he came back from China. And he apparently revised it right before his death. So it's the first and towards the last. And it was originally written for a lay student of his. The Genjo Koan is considered his masterpiece, although he wrote somewhere between 75 and 90 other chapters. This is the heart of his entire work, the Shobo Genzo. So he wrote this for a lay student, a person who had a family, a person who had social, political, economic responsibilities, the kind of person each one of us are. It's something that we can take into our heart, this fascicle. So today I'm going to just say a few words about the title, Genjo Koan. Because you can download it from our website, and of course you have it under your cushions. And please, if you take it to your room, bring it back, because we're going to recite from it every day. The Genjo Koan has been translated by many wonderful people, great, great imaginative folks. But all the translations cluster around the main question, how do we find our way? Simultaneously as an individual and part of the collective. How can we live a life that nurtures our self, our unique individual self, and the whole? I think that's really the essence of this whole piece. Simultaneously living a life conscious of the relative and the absolute, the unique and the common, the synchronous, the different, and the identical. How do I take care of my small self and also self as world? The version that we're using is by our friend Kazuaki Tanahashi. He keeps retranslating this through time. And his English version of the title is Actualizing the Fundamental Point. Making actual, making real, what is the point, the truth of existence. So, other translations that are resonant. The koan of everyday life, is what Mayazumi Roshi called it. So, reminding us, putting the emphasis there on that aspect, it's our everyday life. So this is not something for next week, it's something for today. Yasutani Roshi, one of Mayazumi's teachers, translated what is manifest in absolute reality. So that's old Yasutani, always emphasizing the absolute nature of reality, the oneness of reality. And yet, if there's oneness and there's a manifestation, it has to be the individual, right? Kim, the great commentator on Dogen, calls it the realization koan, seeing the relationship is what makes it real. It's the koan of relationship. Another group translates it as manifesting suchness. How do we manifest suchness? How do we materialize, express, demonstrate our interconnection, our interdependence with all things? And Cleary calls it actualizing the fundamental point, same as Ta-Nehisi. And then there's a very new translator by the name of Myers who catches the momentary quality of this, which a lot of the other ones miss. He calls it truth unfolding. Just truth unfolding as it is. Genjo Koan. Gen is appearing. Something that is hidden appears. Something that you can't see suddenly shows up. What is it that suddenly shows up, that suddenly appears? Are you ready for what suddenly appears? Right now? How difficult it is to be ready for what's appearing now. We're always getting ready for what appeared yesterday or what might appear tomorrow. But what's showing up right now? That's this gen of Genjo Koan. You know, and when we study the Heart Sutra, we remember that there are these qualities that in the old Indian tradition of talking about the mind, samskaras, the walls of the mind, these kind of furrows that it's as if we've run water through them so long that we have these walls in our minds, and it's very difficult to jump out of these canals. These patterns of thinking, and to be free, to have a free thought, to experience what is appearing. So difficult, so difficult. I've learned a lot about that from Sensei, who really focuses very often on what's up for you in this moment in your physical body, as a way to track what your emotional and psychological things are that are going on for you right then. What's happening right now? It's amazing to really look at that. And we don't. We get all caught up in our ideas, our repetitive ideas, our habitual ways of reacting that we learned that were useful up to a certain point, and then begin to imprison us. What does this hidden thing that appears, where does it come from? Where does it go? This could be your question for the entire sesshin. What is appearing for you right now? And to just look at it over and over and over again without going down into the crevices and the patterns of your mind, without following the walls that you've set up, but simply noticing what's appearing right now. Again. So then what balances this again, this what's appearing, is the jo, genjo, the sense of completion, of the completion of that which is appearing. And that's what we mean when we say each moment is complete and perfect just as it is, even if it is an uncomfortable, difficult moment. It is complete. And our suffering arises out of our saying, no, I don't want this moment. If we could see the completion of the moment, the perfection of the moment, however difficult it is, that suffering, that tearing away, moving away from the present, how would drop away. Genjo points us to the wonder of our life. This. I'm sorry I can't share this green tea with you. Because when I took a sip to wet my mouth at the beginning, I thought, oh, this is really good green tea. This wasn't just a simple dip of a tea bag. Somebody worked on that. Mm. Genjo. Even the extremes. Even what our Shuso has to face, which he shares with me because he knows I'm a little squeamish and he's working on that aspect of my character. When people are dying, their bodies begin to liquefy, they dry out, there are a lot of things that happen that are difficult to face. And as a nurse, is the one we call. Also, even in that moment, it is complete and present. And when our Shuso is able to touch his what he has learned, what he practices in his sitting, he is able to be truly helpful to those in the room, to the one who is dying, to the family members, to the other nurses, to be fully present. That is Genjo. That's what we're talking about. That's what this whole Ango is about. That Genjo. And then the end of it, the koan, you all know what koan typically means. It's a kind of a public case, or it's a story that has some edges to it, and we like to use the term paradox. So you can look at it from one perspective, and you look at it from another, and isn't that what I'm talking about? Genjo, koan. Very often, koan means truth. It has the characters have this, the ideograms have this quality of levelness, of equality, of sameness, a kind of sense of the non-dual, oneness. But the oneness of identity and difference, koan. Genjo koan is about showing up. If we were to do a group translation, I would vote for showing up as our translation for Genjo koan. Appearing in every day, every way in our lives. Appearing now with the sleepiness you may feel. Showing up for that. Showing up for ourselves and seeing how showing up for ourselves can be a showing up for everyone. That those are things are not in conflict at all. So there's this phenomenon that I'm very conscious of lately. I've been thinking a lot about. It's the tendency of so many people that I notice to only notice what's in front of us. It's like our eyes are in front of our face, and so we only notice what's in front of us. We never notice what's going on behind us, right? Particularly in our culture. Actually, in Japan and Korea, there's this expression, look behind. The children are taught from a very young age, look behind. But it doesn't seem to be part of our culture. So very often we don't look behind us in traffic when we're driving. So we'll pay great attention to what's going on in front of us, but we'll cut people off who are behind us, or we'll slam on our brakes without noticing what the effect is going to be on those behind us. And you particularly see it like in Manhattan, walking down the street very fast, you know, and all of a sudden people just stop. And you know, you're clicking along there, going really fast, it's like there's no awareness that there's anyone else on the street. Huh? Have you ever found yourself in that position? Or maybe sitting in an airplane and the person in front of you, you know, you've got your little computer there and suddenly the seat back off. And like there's no awareness that there might be someone behind you that you might want to consider, like a hugely overweight person who would then not be able to get out of the seat. Yeah. Very funny. Or when we have workshops, seminars at the Zendo, and people gather up, you know, big little circle, and then the tallest people who sit on two or three cushions always sit in the front. And then you see the people with the cross-legged, kind of smaller, you know. We don't look behind. Huh? So I think that I wouldn't have noticed all these things if I hadn't spent all these years doing Sesshin. And you know, and Sesshin is a marvelous time for self-examination. Standing in line for the food, how you are at the tea service, and that just in the various different aspects, because you're not like this and talking and doing all these things, you can be much more conscious of your body and what your body is doing and your awareness. And you can become much more aware of how you function in the group. And this group is like a small example of how we function in the world. How our every action affects so many other people that we may not be aware of. And it's not all happening in front of our faces. Is the point of what I'm saying. It's happening all around us. We are affecting people all the time. We know that from, thank goodness, from a lot of the work with ecology nowadays. In the natural world, people are becoming more and more aware. This plastic bag. Do I want a plastic bag? And maybe you know a little bit about what plastic is doing to the sea animals and the birds. And maybe you've heard a little bit about something like that, and so you might become more aware when you're asked if you want a red plastic bag for your apples, maybe not. Huh? Maybe not. So, what's really important is to not abandon the self and not abandon the other. To remember the metaphor of the waves in the ocean. They are not separate. We are the waves and we are the ocean. And this is what the Genjo Koan is teaching. And I'm hoping you'll get that this week and this whole 90-day period. That you'll get it in your heart. That you'll get it in your hara. That you'll be able to act on it. That it's not an intellectual entertainment. It's about your life. Then you can really be free. In the Zen Rinkushi it says, for long years a bird in a cage, today flying along with the clouds. It's up to you.